Hi.
Hi.
I'm Alexis Hine,
I'm Erica Wong.
and this is Hide or Practice.
Hello.
Dr. Erica Wong.
Yes.
It is 2024. It has
No.
been close to 12 months since we've recorded last. We're doing it again. How does that make you feel? We're back in the game.
Okay, but first off, I think that just because we haven't been recording, we still talk to each other like.
Well, no, I know, but like the game, we're back in the game, the podcast game. We're doing this again. Hide or Practice 2.0. We're back, baby. How does that make you feel?
I
Because
look
like
forward to it.
you and I as friends, as colleagues, as companions, as long distance, people. Yeah, like that never stopped. But it's been a long time since we've recorded and posted a podcast. So this has been
Been a busy year, what can I
a
say?
busy year. It's been a busy
Okay,
year.
so let's start there.
But yes.
What have you
What
been doing? What were you doing a lot in 2023?
I know, right?
I saw you
2020,
multiple times. See, I
I know
think
that
that's
is
it.
crazy. That was nice. 2023 was a lot for me in a good way because the residency expanded to New York. So I was having to manage both places,
LA and New York,
LA and New York. And so that was exciting. And then we started discussions for London. And then the call for London also happened. So that was, three, and that was a lot. But it was very exciting to, curate a show in Chelsea in addition to the shows I was doing in LA. It was, that was like super amazing on top of like all of the other, things that I do where I just like pile it on myself. But that was a lot of, it was a lot. It was great, but it was a lot. And it's interesting to look back because sometimes I wonder, I'm like, oh my God, like, how did we do this? We had like so much, we were recording all the time. We had episodes like every week for like years. And then it's like, oh yeah, because we couldn't go anywhere and we weren't doing things. And now all of that is pretty much done. I mean, it's not done, but like for all intents and purposes, the way people are acting and engaging with like the world, it's done. So it's back to openings and just networking and going to galleries and going to fairs and doing the full art world extravaganza. Like it's 2019, but honestly, almost like it's more than 2019. I feel like the pendulum swung back a little too hard and we still haven't settled back. I feel like by the end of 2024, 2025, we'll find a better place. But people definitely, I feel like it's gotten a little too much in that. But that's what I've been up to. And it's been a lot, but I love it. I mean, it's been great. It's kind of crazy to like actually sit back and be like, oh yeah, look at all of this. What about you? What are you doing?
Teaching. I feel like that's all that I've said. Like, my
It's
entire
not.
life is about curriculum writing. It's like endless curriculum writing. And then making slide decks, also an endless of that. And then prep work. There's just every week there's the grading. I feel like this is
Oh,
like every single time it's
grading.
like you're grading again. And I was like,
I
that's right. I
know.
am
I'm like,
grading
well, what are
again.
you doing? I'm grading.
And I think like, you've been going on these lives and then I go on and I watch you and then you're like, Dr. Wong. And you're like, what did you just finish doing? And I was like, I just finished teaching. And then
There's
people are
so
just
cute.
like, what did you just teach?
Yeah, what did you just teach? What are you teaching? You are teaching more than you used to. It's a lot.
Am.
You have a much bigger portfolio. What do you call it? Schedule? How does it like what do you call like many different classes? A gaggle of
Like a lot
classes?
of classes, a full schedule, I guess. So what do I teach? I predominantly teach professional master's level students. So then I teach project management. And then I teach, I'm about to go and start teaching MBA level students for social corporate responsibility and ethics and business analysis. Guys, this, like, I teach nothing.
Social corporate, Jesus.
Yeah.
God, I forget
I just
how
want to
smart
make
you
sure
are
that
all the
my day
time.
job, when I teach at the business schools, is I don't actually teach art things. I teach in the business school. And then I also teach at the art school. And then in the art school, I just finished teaching financial practices to creatives. So that was a lot of, like, let's make some financial analysis. Go and teach me, go and tell me about where your break-even point is. How do you budget for your studio practice? Like, how do you actually manage that? And that's all tied in with a piece that you have inside your portfolio. So understanding, like, how much does it actually cost for you to go and make a piece? How long does it take for you to go and break even? How, like, what types of material is needed in order? And then, like, how many pieces do you need to sell in order for you to actually know that you can be making a profit? You know, things like that. That's what I teach at the art schools. So that's what I teach. Exciting.
Very smart. I mean, I don't forget it. I don't forget. I never forget how smart you are, but it's always just really impressive to hear you lay it out all at once, because it's like, damn, so impressive.
Because my brain is like the other side of the brain.
It's fab. It's fab. So 4 years ago, we met after an Instagram live, hit it off, started a podcast, made a bajillion episodes, had a ton of fun, met 1,000 people, and got, you know, all of y'all listening to us. I mean, it's crazy, like, how many people listen and find value in this podcast, which is great, because that's what, like I said, like, we wanted to do this. We had some reason, but it wasn't like a crazy plan of like, this is exactly how we're going to do this. We kind of just plotted along. But one of the things that we were really interested in, and that both of us found frustrating, and we'll probably continue until we die that to be frustrating, is that we, you know, people not having tools to navigate the art world or their artist careers or their administrative careers or just the art world in general, not knowing things with at all because they don't have the tools. They didn't learn in school, they didn't learn, or they can't find tools outside of school. And that's been, you know, one of our kind of main goals of finding good practical advice, finding people who will tell us, like, their true journeys of, like, how they're got to where they are, what they do, why it matters, how it impacts people, you know, the help, the struggles, the failures, the successes. And I think going forward in Hyder Practice 2.0, I think we'd want to continue that journey. I mean, a lot of what we talked about before in the first, you know, bajillion seasons we had, I think it was six.
Yes.
Holy moly. A lot of it was through the lens of the quarantine. A lot of it was through the lens of COVID and, like, how to kind of navigate through that. And for all intents and purposes, like I said, we are kind of post that. People are, you know, operating as if these things are, you know, no longer impactful. And going back to fairs, going back to openings, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd like to get back to giving y'all tools again, giving, you know, some things have changed, most things are the same, but talking to people about who, you know, are doing awesome things, doing cool work, seeing what they're up to, how they got there, just kind of, you know, bitch with Erica sometimes about some stuff, you know, probably won't be as regular as it used to be because we're both busier in, like, real ways. I think everybody is busier in real ways. But, you know, periodically, I'd love to try to get this launched up again. Talk about art world. Talk about art. Talk about careers. Talk about advice. Talk about tools. I mean, Erica, that sound good to you?
Mm-hmm.
I like how I'm asking you this. Like, maybe I didn't already know the answer was yes. Those are the best questions to ask, though. The ones that you already know the answer to. The confidence I can go into. Do you want to do this? Yes. So this is it, guys. 2.0, client or practice. And I think today it'd be fun for us, or I mean, it'd be fun for me and hopefully Erica as well, just to kind of talk about, you know, what we're seeing and, you know, maybe answer a question or two that we both get a lot of on various platforms or IRLZs, and then, you know, wrap it up and then come back again. Cause that's the way this works. That's the way episodes work. It's incredible. You have to say something. You can't just nod.
Oh yeah.
We are out of practice. We forgot about
a little
audio
bit.
Only situation. All right, I'll start. I think the question I get a lot, the most, I think, is about how do I, or I guess the question I get the most that I like because I can answer it from direct experience is how do I network or do outreach when I'm an introvert? Because contrary to popular belief, I am also an introvert. And I am able to do this and everything else I have done because of practice. And it's hard and it's draining. And I dread it most of the time. And I will cycle through 1,000 reasons to not go to this opening or this whatever the thing is that I need to be going to. And art fairs are extremely trying for me, but it's always helpful. I've never regretted doing it. And it is absolutely a muscle that you can work on. And I think that, you know, just the same way, like you fall off going to the gym for a while, or you fall off your diet, or you fall off this like cleaning habit. The first time is always the hardest to like, okay, like this is when I'm going to break out the mop. This is when I'm going to go get a salad. This is when I'm going to, you know, do whatever the thing is that you've been kind of putting off. That first, you know, the first time is the hardest, but then you get into practice and it is like the gym, and you could come up with like structures to make it easier in terms of, okay, this is what I'll, these are three questions I'm going to have in the back of my head that I can talk to somebody. If I get into a conversation with somebody, I'm going to ask them what they've seen, and I'm going to ask them what they think of this piece. And I'm going to see, ask them what they're looking forward to. Those are three questions that you can always ask and people will always answer them if that makes you feel comfortable. I know that I've done that, especially in the beginning, like when I was like, oh God, what do we talk about? I would just listen to see what other people were talking about at an art event. And be like, okay, I'm gonna just ask that. And, you know, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's doable. And like any other muscle, you can absolutely build it up. And there is no way that I know of, that doesn't mean it's impossible, but there is no way that I know of to have a successful art career without a network. Nobody operates on their own. Nobody succeeds. Nobody's an island. And it is an inherently social market and very community driven. Not saying you have to be besties with every gallery out there or every, you know, nonprofit around, but it's not bad to be recognizable. More people be like, oh yeah, I've seen you at places. I've seen you at events. Also, if like the big openings are overwhelming, the easier ways is, you know, if you go to a talk, go to a panel, you go during the day when it's not, you know, crazy busy. It's easy to get like one-on-one time with some people who might work there, or, you know, smaller groups and make some connections that way. But I hope that helped. That's helpful. That's like the biggest question I think I get on a regular basis. What about you? What are people asking you, Erica?
Someone asked me this very recently, was, so can you tell if a piece is going to get sold or not when you see a show? And I was just a bit like, I mean, you can guess depending on the show that you're looking at. But I think like the broader question that is trying to be asked is, how do you read art? And not like, how do you read art? Mm. You know, like, not, I think sometimes like you see on social media when people are like, oh, how, they teach you how to go and stand in front of a painting. And like, you look at the painting and you sort of break down what the references are, understanding material. Like, I'm not talking about that. You know, like that's the component of what you learn when you go to art school, or you learn about art history and that. I'm saying like, how do you read art in terms of whether it has, someone will actually buy it or not. And I would say that, broadly speaking, different types of galleries have functions that do certain things. So if you are able to go into a gallery and you can say to yourself, like, this type of work seems like it would be sold to these types of collectors, then probably the chances of it being sold is like pretty high, right? Because like you've identified exactly who your consumer base is already. And they already have a roster of people. So things like that, it's like you sort of just know that it's going to move on its own. Mm-hmm. And then I was like thinking really hard, like how to go and explain this to somebody. And then I'm like, there's like those like really conceptual work that can be collected, but it's for a very, very small grouping of people because they like a specific theme to be challenged or material to be challenged. And like, I have this image in my head right now of this like mixed media sculpture I saw in New York, which was like this melted shipwreck with screens on it and like figurines. And I was just like, and I was in my head thinking, well, not everyone's going to buy this, you know? And it's like, it's not even going to go into storage. The likelihood of this being might be if the artist becomes really famous at some given point and it becomes in their like solo retrospect. Like that's sort of when you would see that this would like exist, you know, because it was like a period of time when like they were exploring this that like led to something else. But like these types of work is probably not going to be sold very often. That's okay because like the gallery is aware of that, but the gallery doesn't necessarily only just sell things 100% sell through, right? So like sometimes they need to go and have really conceptual artists that push certain things, right? And I was like, again, like thinking, this is a much more complex answer than I think most people are anticipating from me. And
oh,
it's
for
like,
sure.
Right. And it's like, I don't think that this is like a good answer. Because
no, people are looking for like, if the painting's blue, it's going to sell.
And I was like, and I remember I was like, okay, so if you look in here, like, what do you think it's going to sell? And he was like, at these like paintings. And I was like, yes, why? He's like, because they're, you can just buy them, hang them off the wall. I was like, exactly. Right? Like you can tell exactly what would, because if people are willing to go and pay for, I don't know, 50 to 100 grand, and this is something that you can understand that you want to live with, then probably buy that. You're not going to buy that mixed media melted pirate ship, right? Because you're not going to buy that. So, you know, it's just like, it's basic shopping, like good math, bad math, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that there's like a contextual, practical thinking you can go into it. Like, can it go somewhere? Can it go somewhere easily? Can it, you know, how much would it be to transport something, to store something, to insure something?
Exactly.
To conserve something, to fix something. You know, if something's, I saw this incredible piece, I want to say it was by Jorge Paris at Nicodem the other day. And I mean, it looked like it had to have been made in place. I don't understand how they installed it, how they will deinstall it, where it's going to go. But man, it was beautiful. Oh my God, it was gorgeous. But like, you know, someone might, and it might actually, it was so conceptual and like its execution, it might've honestly been like one of those things where it's like, you get like some stuff and like some instructions and then like, you basically like make your own, like could have been like that much of a conceptual piece, which would have been cool too, you know, who knows? And also, fun fact, guys, if you ever come up across a piece like that and you're like, how does this work? You can ask. I didn't ask because I was on a roll that day and I had to go pick up another piece and I was just like popping in really quick. But you can ask somebody if you're at a gallery and like you see something that you don't understand or you're like, how does this work? Or did this sell? Or I'm curious about like what this is made out of or how did you guys install it? You can always ask. Honestly, like 8 times out of 10, someone will tell you. Like 2 times out of 10, somebody will be like either really busy or like a real gatekeepy jerk. But like most of the time, whoever's hanging out at the front desk is totally open about talking about the art because they care too.
100%. 100. And
And
also, like, if it was a really weird install, they probably would be like, let me tell you this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let me tell you about this install. I mean, that happened. I was at the, there was a, oh, there's this new gallery here. I was with Tim Schneider, actually. I want to say, I'm going to, hold on, I'm going to find out the gallery. Ghana Gallery. It's new-ish in LA. Specializes in Korean artists. And it had a show with, forgive my pronunciation because I am Texan. Chiharu Shiota, that thread artist.
Oh, the one with the red
with the red
string.
strings, the black strings that are so incredible. And they do like these kind of, they do like wall pieces. And this is actually interesting on this topic as well, because they'll have these incredible installations that are like an entire room, but then they'll also be like wall pieces that you could buy. And then that's the thing. It's like you put up this crazy installation that like no one might actually buy, but then it's part of, you kind of, it's almost like a souvenir. You get like the nice, like the cool wall piece or like the tiny sculpture, and you're like, look what I have. But it was super fun to talk to the people who worked there because they were so excited to talk about the install because it was crazy. So it's like it's like a 6-day thing, and there's instructions, and there's somebody in from the studio for
the poor person who had to write that manual.
I know, right? But then I guess there was like a lot of freedom. Like there was like a couple like anchors of where some things had to start. And then once those anchors were in, there was a lot of freedom for the people who were doing it to actually just like to weave and adhere the strings where it needed to be, which I thought was really interesting and organic. And but it was really fun. It was really fun to talk to the people at the desk about the install and like how that worked and the timeline. And it was great. It was great. It was great to gab. And it's, but that's interesting because that kind of like hits the both things. It's like you can, there's another way, like now I met somebody else at this gallery, totally lovely. I will recognize them if and when I see them again, and vice versa. So look, networking. I learned something fabulous. I had this incredible experience. The show was amazing. And then,
hey guys, I have to tell you. So this is something I was reading earlier this morning with the heading. Like I followed someone, and I was like, I would love to have an episode where it's like I followed Alexis Hyde in during Breeze, which is exactly what I did, by the way.
Oh my god.
This is exactly what I did. And because, so Alexis is much more extroverted introverted than I am. Like I'm severely
I have so much more practice.
And it was like, and it's like I don't have an issue going to an art fair. Like I can go to an art fair. I just don't social when I go to art fairs. Like I socialize inside my head to myself only. And so like, you know, when she says that she has the practice, like, I mean, this girl goes up to every booth and she makes a conversation. And I just was standing there thinking like, that's like, and she would find something new to say, like to every single person at a different booth. And I was like, and it's like, if I just had a camera following her, that I, like when she says that she practices and she does these things and then she like talks to her client, like guys, I literally just followed her. Like, I kid you not, like we went to Freeze and she was with the client and I just like was about like 10 steps behind her the entire time. Like she looked at stuff, she talked about like the art with her client, and then I looked at stuff and I like would talk to myself about that and I would like listen to her and I'd be like, yeah, okay, that's pretty cool. And then I was like, this is so interesting because it's just like amazing to watch someone like not even sell, because like you don't even really like hard sell to a client, you just explain things, and I'm like, yes, just explain things, and then go and like talk to the people at the booth and be like, so what's this, like, you know, like I have a client that might be interested in this. And I was like, see, but you don't make it gross.
I don't make it. Thank you. I'm glad I don't make it gross. I'm trying not to be gross. I'm never trying to be gross. I do. Well, because I mean, I will say I'm in like such a nice position because of the residency that like I am not pressured to sell anything. Like for the people that I do work with, it's like clients, I'm, you know, that's like a fun extra thing that I can do on a level that a lot of advisors can't do because it's not very affordable to sell things that are less than $20,000 on a regular basis because you're not making much in terms of commission. And that means you have to move like a lot of units, and that's just, it's hard to do that. So, I'm in this like really sweet spot of being able to work with people. And because of like the price points and because of like where they are in their collecting journeys, and because of like my, you know, situation, having, you know, a salary through the residency, I don't have to push. And it's not as urgent for me. And I want, especially because of like where people are in their collecting journeys, I want people to be really comfortable and like excited about what they're getting and not feel pressured and not like have to sell something, which is also super selfish of me just because I hate dealing with the secondary market. That like I can just make sure that people are buying what they want when they want it because they want it and not just because I need to make some money. Art sales is so hard.
It
So I'm like super, it's like super like nice for me. Like I'm in such a nice position because of that. And then it can be like a really fun thing that I do with people who are excited about like starting their journey.
I think
Which
something
also makes it more fun for
is
me.
what, which is really nice. Well, maybe not so nice for the people who like are trying to get into the art world, but I think something that is like very different about the art world is that because if you aren't let in, you're not let in because you're trying really hard to go and meet people who have some sort of a background and has time or interest, and it might be time and interest to go and take you on as a client. Because it's like it's really, really labor intensive.
Oh, it's very labor
Because like,
intensive.
and it's like people don't think it's like it's labor intensive in the way where it's like, what do you mean? And it's like, well, I actually have to know you personally. Then I need to go and figure out what you like. And then from what you like, then I have to go and figure out what you might buy. But, and that might have nothing to do or everything to do with how much money you're willing to spend. And then what actually your taste is. Because how much you're willing to spend and what's available in the market, very different things altogether. Right?
Absolutely.
And so it's like people don't realize that. Like artists, why they might have a really hard time finding a dealer or finding representation. It's because of all these other things that are happening on the other side, which is you're identifying these people who might buy you. They also have a budget, but it's not only dependent on their budget, but it's like, where is that going to go? Like, what does that actually do for somebody else? And so it's like, it's very, very labor intensive for everybody.
It
And that
is.
is actually why people don't get into the market, right? People don't get in and meet dealers is because it's like super laborious to find someone who's going to like hold your hand and usher you into the industry. And so like it ends up being we're in a really privileged position when you hold this much knowledge. And it's like I either let you in because I'm willing to explain things to you, or I'm not willing to let you in because I don't have time for you. And it has nothing to do with whether I'm a dickhead or not. It's like literally, I don't have time because every single person that I meet, if they are going to become a potential client, is like, I have to give them art history 101, and then I gotta give them materials 101, and then I gotta go and give them drawing 101, sculpture 101, painting 101. It's like that is like exactly what happens when you meet clients and like you're walking through the fair with them or shows and whatever, right? And this is why it's like it's really hard work.
It
It's,
is.
you know.
And it's not urgent, you know, like it's different as in say, like I kind of sometimes compare it to being like a stylist or like a personal shopper where like, I mean, obviously the amount of money and like the kind of the feeling of commitment to a purchase is higher, is bigger, feels more permanent than like, you know, getting new pants or a new suit or something like a dress for an occasion. But then it's like, oh, okay, like I need a dress for Saturday night. You know, I'm not going to be picky, you know, like if it's like really like down to it, like, or, you know, maybe it's not going to be my style, but it fits, or like, It's not my style, but it's my favorite.
Or maybe
color.
I'll find something inside that I already have. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, or like maybe I'm not going to find a dress. I'll find some shoes that's going to make an older dress make me feel like better. And so like when you're dealing with something like that, it's like you can move like so much faster. But for something like art, especially for younger collectors and earlier collectors, it's like, you know, what is this going to say about your, you know, your taste? What is it like, where, what direction is it going in? Like, what are you want, trying to build? Are you just trying to hang something on the wall, which is totally fine? Or are you really trying to build something, which is also great, you know, and that, or like a 70,000 reasons in between. And it's, and like figuring that out is also, cause it's so much easier. It's like, oh, well, why do you need a dress? Oh, I've got a party. Why do I need some new shoes? I broke a heel. Why do you need a new car? Mine's old, you know, like, but like, why do you need this piece of art? Like, let me explain to you. I'm in an existential crisis and I need to feel something, you know?
Yep.
And which is a great reason. And if, and anybody out there who needs to like feel something because you're in an existential crisis, like call me, you know, like I'll find you some art. Like I'm really good at my job actually. And but it is, it's, but it's to figure that out and then to get through that. And then, you know, even if you've got a bajillion dollars, like it's still a big purchase, mm-hmm. you know, even if you're, even if you've got $1 billion, that doesn't mean that everything's just going to be like an automatic, yep, this is it.
And it's also like when you buy art, it's not like as if you're a shopaholic and you're going out to go yeah. and buy like makeup at Sephora. Right? Like, it's not like, I'm gonna, oh, maybe I'll just try this blush today. Or like, oh, I'll get a new mascara. Or like, I'll do whatever. Not the same thing, right? Like, people aren't buying pieces of art every single week.
No. I mean, some people are, but like, not many. Not many. And I guarantee you, for every, for the people who are buying a piece a week or a piece every other week, they're seeing 50 pieces that week, you know? And that's from a curator or an advisor that's looked through thousands of pieces that week
for
put
thumbs.
That 50
yeah.
In front of them.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's not just like, you know, we're at Nordstrom's and I'm like, oh, I like this white t-shirt. It's, you know, I mean, there are things that you can do to like get further quicker. And then like, once you get into the habit and you know the names and you know the programs and you know the galleries, you know what to expect. It is easier to just be like, oh no, I definitely want this piece by, you know, Susie Q artist, because I know what she does and I know how her practice is and I know what she produces and it's like so great. But it definitely is a little, oh my gosh, we just like really got into like me.
This is what happens when you now talk to the business prof. This is a me problem. But I also think that like, maybe it's because for the last year, I really tried to be able to go and find everyday language to go and explain to artists
yeah.
like the other side of why it isn't always easy. And these are the things that haven't ever been taught to you. And so like, for example, I was doing user research in September, maybe, or maybe November. I can't remember. Like somewhere in the like 4 to 6 months ago. And this, one of the artists that I had interviewed, he was like, what is going to solve my problem is that I just meet a whole bunch of rich people. When I have an exhibition that I just, there's access to a whole bunch of rich people. And I was like, and having a bunch of rich people in your exhibition, what will that do? And he was like, well, they would buy my stuff. And I was like, so how do you know for sure that just because they're in the same room with your pieces and that they have money, that they would definitely buy what you have on offer? And I think it was like a lot of like very like research interview questions to go and say like, but those things aren't mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. Just because you have people inside your room and you have eyeballs does not mean that your goods are going to move.
Yeah.
That is like a really fundamental gap that requires a lot of the other things that they don't tell you in art school. Like, what is your brand? Why is someone going to go and buy that? How are you different from someone else? And unfortunately, because like this is now what I teach a lot of, this is like actually being able to go and break that down into really manageable steps in a language that makes sense to artists. Like, that's what I do a lot of, because I think, like, it's super important, because we never got taught this.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just because it's like deeply unsexy to go and talk about this, but like super helpful, right? But it's like,
yeah,
let's go and build you a val prop. And the people are like, why would I need value proposition? And it's just like, because, like, well, what do you bring to the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a occupational hazard of mine now. I'm just boring and annoying.
No, but I think it's really important to think about these things like contextually, because I think that there is like a late stage capitalism that like a rich person's just gonna, or like even like just like a fantasy of, I'm just gonna get a patron who's just gonna be wealthy and just like give me a lot of money and like buy all of my work. And I mean, it's happened a few times in the past, absolutely. And it's not bad to like hope that you're going to be the person who's going to win the lottery and like get that thing. But there's quite a few unsold works at Frieze in Basel every year in the rooms with the most wealthy people and the most art collectors of art collectors. And it's, you know, and they're not moving.
I'll tell you what a collector bought me one time when he came to my studio.
What?
He bought me 7 pizzas.
That's amazing. I wish somebody would buy me 7.
I know a lot of artists don't actually have time nor money to go and eat, so I'm just gonna bring you a bunch of pizzas.
Incredible.
I was like, okay, thank you.
If you guys knew how small Erica Wong is, 7 pizzas is an insane thing to bring her. She is so small. She's like, literally 40% of my size. If he brought me 7 pizzas, now we're talking. He can bring you 2 pizzas. 2 pizzas is inappropriate.
I remember just sitting there like thinking, what am I going to do with all these pizzas? Like, oh my God.
With these pizzas. I'm surprised you didn't make an installation with them, honestly, given your practice.
I was like, in Hong Kong. I think that like it would just be gross.
That'd
but
be a weird.
That is probably one of the most memorable things that a collector brought me, was 7 pizzas. And I was like, okay.
Incredible.
Yeah.
What have you been reading, watching, or listening to this week?
Oh my God, talk about the most boring things. I've been reading a lot of reports because it's March.
Q1, baby.
All the reports have come out. Mm-hmm. That's really all that I've been reading. And then the sell through, whatever, for Art Basel, Hong Kong, that just has wrapped.
Yeah.
I was slightly surprised by the numbers. Like, the first round of numbers that I saw were much smaller than I had anticipated, and then they like finally decided to go and have like the really big glossy numbers, like the 1.9 million and like the, mm-hmm. I was like, there we go, that's
there
what
we
we're
go.
Anticipating, you know, not the stuff that's for like $20,000. And I was like, I wonder what's happening there.
Yeah,
what have you been reading, watching, and listening to?
I just finished a book called First Lie Wins, which is like a thriller that was in Reese Witherspoon's book club. It was really fun. It was a really fun read. And I did not get the twist. And that was great. That doesn't happen often. So that was like a really fun. I've been doing a lot of really escapey. I've been so into this podcast, Las Culturistas. And I know I'm the absolute last person to get on that, because they are on episode, I think they said this week, 450 or something insane. And I'm like, oh my God, guys, have you heard this podcast with Bone Yang and Matt Rogers? It's my fave. But it's been really great, because I'm actually like laughing out loud when I'm driving. I mean, I drive a lot now. My commute has gotten extensive, and so it's been nice to have a podcast. And yeah, and that's been what's really been taking up my entertainment lately.
Great.
So yeah, Dr. Erica Wong, where can our listeners find you if they need to?
You can find me on all social media channels that you expect, like Instagram, TikTok, mm-hmm. at mypracticeplaybook.com. Or the handle My Practice Playbook.
I will put that in the blurby. And you guys know, or you don't, maybe you're new, and I'm at Hide or Die everywhere. And I will also put that in the blurby. And if you like this, guys, smash that like button, subscribe. Helps the algo. as we all know. So until next time, which will hopefully be soon, but don't count on like a weekly thing, but definitely count on us going forward. We'll definitely be coming at you. And but yeah, until that next time, bye.
Bye.